We're all familiar with the term telepathy. That word is part of the modern lexicon. The guy who came up with it is a guy named Frederick Myers, and he's the first of the authors of The Impossible, chronicled in and Jeff Kripal's new book, Authors of the Impossible. Jeff, tell us who this guy is.
Well, Fred Myers was a classicist, which means he was a professor of Latin and Greek at Cambridge University in the last two decades of the 19th century. So he died in 1901. And Myers was, this was a few decades after Darwin's The Origin of Species came out in 1859 and kind of rocked the religious world of England and really the whole Western world. And it was also after the heyday of spiritualism and seances and mediumship. And Myers was a professor around Cambridge, and he got together with a number of his other colleagues there, including a couple of his teachers, and they founded something called the London Society for Psychical Research, or simply the SPR, as it came to be called. And it was indeed Myers who coined the word telepathy in 1882 out of two Greek particles, tele, from a distance, and pathos, deep or profound feeling. And we can get into that, but I think that's actually the key, is the pathos part.
This guy had a heck of a life.
Yeah, he did. He really did. He spent the last two decades of that century basically attending hundreds and hundreds of seances and, piling through literally thousands of letters from people who wrote in offering their stories of what came to be called the psychical in the 1870s.
Can you point to some cases that he explored that our listeners would be interested in learning about that would suggest that this is something to be taken seriously?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you read his book, it came out in 1903. It's called Human Personality and Its Survival of Bodily Death. It's actually a horrible title, but to Myers' credit, he didn't give it that title. He was dead at that point. His colleagues did. And it's just filled with hundreds of these. And probably the most impressive involved a Boston medium named Mrs. Piper, who over a number of years contacted or channeled any number of deceased loved ones for various people. And those are probably some of the most dramatic stories. The other dramatic story here is that Myers was in love with the wife of his cousin, a woman named Annie Hill Marshall, who sadly committed suicide. And Myers spent the last two decades trying to contact Annie through mediums and felt he actually had done that. So
you hint in your chapter about him that he had some great stuff, that he had really what he considered to be really solid proof that he was in contact with this woman, and yet for very human reasons, the notes, the evidence, the writings all got tossed out.
Right. Myers felt that his most dramatic evidence for the survival of bodily death involved his contacts with Annie through a medium named Rosina Thompson. And he documented all of this in his book, but then he himself passed away in 1901. And when the book was going into production, his widow, his wife or widow now, took a look at it and was understandably not very happy about all of the stuff about Annie, and so she forced the editors to take it all out. So all of that stuff is basically gone now.
Do you have a general sense of what it was in there?
I sure don't. I do know, though, and this is what's so interesting about telepathy, and this is really what I want to talk about, is that Myers felt strongly that what telepathy was really about is eros or erotic love. And he thought that for a variety of reasons, partly because he was a lover of Plato and one of Plato's dialogues called the Symposium, which is all about Eros. But he also felt that way, I think, because he intuited on some level that his connections to Annie beyond death were somehow hooked up with this mysterious energy that we call Eros or erotic love. And so when he coined the term telepathy, he didn't mean, you know, somebody picking up a phone. This wasn't telephone. This was telepathy. Pathos means deep or profound feeling. And so Myers and his colleagues felt that what creates a telepathic event isn't something neutral. It's something deeply emotional and usually involves love. And so these things tend to happen between loved ones or between family members. And I think that's a really key point that Myers left us.
I was interested in some of the other names that you list as his contemporaries, people who were also interested in telepathy and what we would characterize as paranormal. I mean, these are names that intellectual giants of the day. It almost made it seem like, wow, there was a lot of what must have been the power players in science and academia of the time were okay with studying this stuff. And I wonder if I'm getting a bad read on that, whether people like Myers faced ridicule and scorn for looking into this stuff.
No, that's a very good read, George. I mean, this is why Myers is so important to know about, is because the study of psychical phenomena arose in England around Cambridge University. This was a high-end intellectual pursuit, and the people who were writing about this stuff were primarily intellectuals and scientists and literary figures. So it's not at all a misperception to see that the psychical was a very big deal among very elite scientists and intellectuals at the end of the 19th and the early 20th century.
That is, give us some names.
Well, the man who coined the term psychic was a physicist named William Crookes. The man who coined the term ectoplasm was another scientist named Charles Richet. Sigmund Freud wrote 6 papers on telepathy. Carl Jung spent much of his life studying the paranormal. Arthur Conan Doyle, of course, the inventor of Sherlock Holmes, was a lifelong enthusiast of psychical research. Henri Bergson, the great French philosopher and Nobel Prize winner, was the president of the Society for Psychical Research for a while. And I mean, we could go on and on. Virtually, well, not, I could name dozens of these at that period of time. It was a hot, hot topic.
So what happens in the 130-year interim then to make it where it's not mainstream, it's not acceptable for scientists to study this stuff, to do hardcore research into it? I mean, I know that there are pockets of that kind of research with some very brilliant people around the country, and you mentioned some of them in the book, and that does go on, and we can get into that, but why it becomes such a no-no for modern scientists, American scientists in particular, to pay attention to these things?
Well, remember, it's even a no-no for people who study religion. So it's a big no-no across the board in the university to do this. And the reasons are complex, but they boil down, I think, to two major influences in the 20th century. One is what we call behaviorism, which starts out in the 19-teens. And what behaviorism says is that the only way to study mind is to look at what people do. You can only study behaviors. You can only study things you can see. You can't posit mental states that you can't see. And so beginning in the 19-teens and running through the 20s and 30s, academic psychology, which was where a lot of this was happening, moved further and further away from things like the unconscious or even consciousness, and they just were studying behaviors. They were studying rats, essentially, in mazes.